listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. It's www.resonancefm.com.
This is the Bike Snob of New York City, and you're listening to The Bike Show on Resonance FM 104.4.
Welcome to another season of The Bike Show, just in time for the midwinter. We're going to be going right up till Christmas with the best of London cycling, the politics, the culture, the fun, the fear and the loathing. And this show will feature a race that takes place every 10 years, a race on penny farthings. That's coming up later, the Knutsford Great Race. But first of all, a trip down to the cycle show, the place where all the new things in cycling get announced and previewed to the world, down at Earl's Court. That was last month, and I went along, spoke to the people I thought who had the most interesting stuff to show, and began with a chat with Brooks, the venerable saddle company, who had a new saddle that they were going to tell me all about.
Hi, I'm Steve Green, office manager at Brooks England. We've brought out a new range of saddles, a new family, if you like, of saddles called the Select. And these are being produced from a tannery in Sweden, which is different to what we normally do. And the difference is that the cattle for these has been organically reared, only grass-fed, allowed to roam around free range. And also they're allowed to been allowed to live a little bit longer, so it's produced a much kind of compact, much more energetic kind of finish on the saddle. And there's no colour dye been added to these either, so the colour that you see on them, which is like a natural tan colour, is natural colour that's come from the tanning process. These are aimed more at long distance riders, and because they're going to be a little bit harder to break in, but they're going to last considerably longer than the regular saddles.
So were you looking for a new type of material in terms of performance, or was it the ethical issues that was driving you?
It was the ethical issues foremost. We were actually quite surprised that the result came, you know, with this firmer finish as well. And also a kind of quirk to this saddle is that there'll be a number printed on the inside of the leather, which you can actually ring up the trading industry in Stockholm, and they will actually tell you which farm the animal came from for this particular saddle.
And so what's the production run, and what's the price going to be?
The price is obviously going to be a little higher than our normal saddles. There's going to be a premium on there. They're running at 125 for the regular saddles and 160 for the Swallow.
My name's Robert Dickman. The company is Bisignals Limited, and we are a company based in the UK. We design and develop all our range of lights and torches and helmets with integral lights in the UK.
And so what have you brought to the show this year?
Well, we brought to the show this year, we obviously have our lights with indicators, flashing indicators, front and rear, wireless communicated. We have here the pebble, which is...
So hang on a minute, you've got indicators on a bicycle. Is that... Yeah. That's... What about your arm going out?
Is that... Well, the arm is only limited, and obviously a lot of people aren't comfortable making arm signals. Plus, at night, you can't be seen. And when you're manoeuvring, you've got to keep your hands on the bike. So this allows you to supplement the use of the arm with indicators, which continue to tell everybody where you're going.
Now, one of the things that's my personal bugbear about bicycle lights is that they turn on inadvertently when they're in your bag during the day. So you get to put your bike lights on at the end of the day to go home in the dark, and you open your bag and you realise it's been flashing for 6 hours, using up all the battery. You've come up with a solution to that. Do you want to talk us through how that works?
Yes, well, what we've done is quite simple, really. All our lights are sets, so when you take them on and off the bike, you unclip them easily, and they clip together when you take them off the bike.
So it's rather brilliant, actually. I mean, they're basically like two halves of a kind of lozenge shape unit, yeah. And they click together. And the clicking together process means that the two surfaces containing the switch are facing each other and therefore cannot be touched.
I couldn't have said it better myself, but yeah, that's very true. And then we also have, at the show, we have a new product, which is the helmet with an integral light.
Now, this looks very futuristic. Have you seen the film Tron? This looks something out of the film Tron.
As far as I know, it wasn't, but no, basically it's a helmet with integral light built in with a light pipe. So you have two super bright LEDs at the rear, which send the light all the way around the head. You can have constant or flashing light, and therefore you can be, and it's a rechargeable battery integral. So you can charge it on your USB socket. You don't have to worry about putting lights on your helmet. It's all there, and you can be seen from the side, where a lot of the impact side, you know, this gives you maximum visibility all the way 360 degrees.
My name is David Chadwick. I'm the managing director of Caradice. We make cycle bags and cycle luggage.
So what have you brought to the show that's new this year?
We brought most of our range, but our new product is City Classics, which are a range of premium brand cycle luggage aimed at the commuter who wants to look a little bit different and likes quality stuff.
We go and take a look?
Yeah, sure. So we've got here, we've got a small tool pouch, which will look really good on a fixie bike. And also a very small size saddle bag that will go on the handlebars or behind, and that comes with its own leather and 100% cotton webbing shoulder strap. And then we do the Kelbrook satchel, with a kind of military grade webbing on, the quality cast buckles, and the premium grain leather as well.
So Caradice is all about this duck cotton.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the properties of duck cotton? It's not actually made of ducks, is it?
It's not made of ducks, no. The duck actually refers to the weave. It's a very square weave, and it's a very tight weave. And the quality that we use is an 18-ounce, so it's a very heavy one. It's impregnated with special wax and rot-proof qualities. And the special thing about cotton duck is that when it's sewn with a normal fabric, once you've put a needle through it, it becomes leaky at the seams. But with cotton duck, if you use a cotton thread as well, when it becomes wet, the cotton swells and it seals its own seam. So it's the original waterproof fabric, really. I mean, they used to make water buckets out of this and carry water around, and the military still uses the cotton like this as well.
So, I mean, as well as working well, it looks incredibly stylish and incredibly good. So are you feeling the sort of upswell of this interest in natural fibres, leather? Obviously Brooks have had a renaissance. Are you feeling that same kind positive energy?
Definitely. I mean, I was just explaining to someone earlier about the saddlebags, which we've been making for 80, 90 years. 10 years ago, they looked to be on the wane, but the last 5 years, they've just taken off again. And people really go for the retro look, they go for the quality, and also uniquely, it's still made in the UK as well, we'll still make it.
And I'm a great advocate of the bicycle cape.
Yes.
As opposed to the sort of boil-in-the-bag, traditional anorak and waterproof trousers look. And Caradice have been flying the flag for bicycle capes for a long time. You've got one here.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk us through this one? This is called a duck's back poncho, the label says. And a very reasonable £52.95.
That's right, yeah. And again, this is made from 100% wax cotton, but obviously a lighter quality, a different kind of quality, really. And it comes with a lined hood and
it's got a nice little check trim there.
Yeah. Again, very retro, very English feel. There is a lot of people who like a cape because it gives that kind of airy feel to it, and you don't get too hot and sweaty. The bad news is the hand signals get a bit muted.
My name is Britta Zimmermann, and I work for Schmidt Maschinenbau that produce hub dynamos and LED lights in Germany.
And so what are you showing particularly at the cycle show this year?
We have very lightweight hub dynamos, the Sonderlux, and extremely bright headlights made of aluminium. And together, this is a perfect light system much easier to use when you're commuting or when you go long distance cycling.
But you don't have to replace the batteries?
No, you don't need to replace the batteries. You don't need to fear any thieves because it stays on the bike. It's not easy to remove.
If you could talk through in a kind of secondary school level physics, how does a hub dynamo like this actually work? What have you got? You got magnets inside there? What's spinning around?
I can show you a model to look inside. They're very strong neodymium magnets on the outside that rotate with a wheel. And then there is a stator with a coil on the axle. And as soon as the wheel moves, an electric circuit will be built.
And there's been incredible progress, hasn't there, in the last few years in terms of the lights that these LEDs can give off. You know, can you describe how much better things have got and where are we now at the very, very best of the range?
For 3 years we have these very bright LED lights now, and they're so bright you can go through a dark forest without fear. It's fun going through. The darker it is, the more fun it is.
And so how much does a hub dynamo, a Schmidt Son hub dynamo cost?
It's about £150. £170, a very lightweight, modern one.
Taking a break from doing the rounds of the cycle show to come back to what is temporarily the spiritual home of the bike show, kindly by invitation of the London Fixed Gear and Single Speed Forum, and chatting to David Kitchen, aka Velocio, who is the founder and the man who brought London Fixed Gear Single Speed Forum to the cycle show. Why are you here?
I know, that's a crazy question. Everyone asks, because we're not selling anything and we're not here with new products, we're just here. We're really just here just to tell people, you know, we're not just a website, we're massive, we're big, and when we come to you and say, hey, we want to build a polo court, then take us seriously, because there's a lot of us and there's a real demand. And that's a big thing, because when you say you're a website, you just get dismissed. People just go, they're small, there's one or two people, there's not much here. So we're here just to go, nope, there's 250,000 people who visit this every month, take us seriously.
So what's the reaction been? I mean, this is just the trade and press day today, but what's the reaction been so far?
Fantastic. Mostly because of this photo wall, which obviously this is the radio, you can't see it. But if you can't see it, there's 2,500 photos in a mosaic that's 4 meters wide, 3 meters high. And every single one is individually pinned on there. And the majority of the images are unique. And it's the most eye-catching thing here.
My name's James Nash and I'm here with Bike Dock Solutions.
And what have you brought to the show this year, James?
We have bought our BDS cycle shelter, which parks 10 cycles.
And so we're standing in it now. It's a great big long piece of metal with some perspex on top, so it'll keep the bikes dry in the rain.
It will do. It will keep the bikes dry in the rain. It also comes with gates, so it'll keep it protected from the weather and also thieves. So you can lock your bike inside the shelter and lock the gate itself.
And so it comes with a rack that you call the toast rack, which is a bit like a toast rack but for bikes. So that's got five Sheffield-style hoops.
That's correct. It's got five Sheffield-style hoops, and you can park two bikes either side, and they're 3 metres in length. The whole rack is 3 metres in length, so it's quite compact, so you can park 10 bikes within 3 metres worth of space.
And so the total footprint of the of the whole stand?
The whole stand is 4 by 2 metres in the actual footprint, and it's 2.2 metres high.
And what does it go for? How much do you have to splash out on one of these?
Believe it or not, it is such a good price. It is £1,350. That's £1,350. That includes the bike rack and delivery to anywhere in the UK.
And does that include installation, or is that installation extra?
Installation is slightly more. You'd be looking at installation for around about £600 anywhere in the UK on top of. But it's probably going to be more worth it than trying to buy all the tools yourself to do it.
And who are you selling them to?
We're selling an awful lot of these, believe it or not, to Transport for London. They're one of our largest customers, most prestigious customers, I should say, for workplaces around London. As TfL are actually supplying workplaces at the moment with cycle parking through ourselves. So all companies have to actually pay for, if they are eligible, is the installation, if they wish to take it. Also dealing with a lot of local authorities, Borough of Barking and Dagenham, London Borough of Newham, just two of our more high-profile customers, and they're buying an awful lot of shelters at the moment for hospitals, schools, a lot of public amenities, really.
My name's Sean Moulton, the Moulton Bicycle Company, based in Bradford-on-Avon. All the bicycles we make are made in England.
What's rocking the cycle show for Moulton's this year?
New introduction of the TSR2, which is a two-speed back-pedal brake, very simplistic version of the Space Frame Moulton. No cables to split. Very swift off the mark, swift off the traffic lights, inches, probably 50 and 70 direct drive and overdrive, and then a very easy back pedal brake. So you get to the lights, slightly put on the brakes, then once you head off in the lower gear again, very easy to ride through town.
So this is featuring Sturmey Archer's remake of the Fichtel & Saxe Duomatic hub, which is a hub of some legendary following, which is no longer in production, but now Sturmey Archer have come in and filled that gap.
That's right, absolutely. I think the Moulton company used the two-speed Fichtel & Saxe Geomatic for many years, and one of our riders rode it from Chippenham to Australia, took a spare one with him just in case, and buried it somewhere in Iraq. I think it's probably still there today if it hasn't been found by a mine detector. We took original Fichtel & Saxe Geomatic over to Sunray Sturmey Archer last year, and they had a good look at it. And now this is fully available on the market, and at last we're making the TSR2.
And so this bike, the TSR2, maybe you could rename it the People's Moulton, because it comes in at a pretty reasonable price, in a way harking back to the F-frame models of the 60s that sort of dominated the market to a certain extent in the 60s, and then obviously the early introduction of the first Space Frame, which had a two-speed model. What does this one retail for?
£950, including VAT.
So you're getting quite a lot of Moulton innovation and engineering for less than a grand.
Exactly.
Because it's got the front and rear suspension.
It's got the front and rear suspension. We've done a few mods to the front suspension. It's now got a rebound in it so you don't clunk when you come out of a hole. It's got a new height adjuster and a few other bits and pieces on it which neaten up the front stainless links. And the separability of this bicycle is very sweet, because obviously there's no cables to split, and it just looks absolutely pure Moulton through. And as you say, quite rightly you said so, getting quite a lot of Moulton for less than a grand.
And it's got a belt drive. Has that been controversial? I mean, it's a sort of plastic chain basically, but the advantage of it being it doesn't get your trousers greasy or your leg greasy,
and it doesn't need maintenance. It's maintenance free. Nice thing about the belt drive, it's completely silent. And the pickup is, I think there's less play in this belt than there is in the chain. So it's instant.
So if the TSR2 we're looking at here in very flame orange is the People's Moulton, should we take a walk over to the other side of the stand and the other end of the price range for what I've perhaps rather unfairly christened the Oligarch's Moulton? What's this? Talk us through this one.
Thanks, Jack. This is... what we did was we wanted to go back to Alex Moulton's original concept of 1982, Space Frame, and do it in the best way we possibly could to sort of celebrate his 90th year. And this is the new Moulton Speed, which we've managed to do completely in stainless. So the fluid damp rear spring is stainless, front stirrup is stainless, all the rear fork parts, the whole of the frame as usual, seat pillar and the stem. Seat pillar and stem are both in 953 stainless steel, and the whole thing's silver brazed with 55% silver, fitted up with Super Record, and it will weigh, 19 and a quarter pounds, very stiff, very swift and a pleasure to ride.
And so what's the price and what's the current waiting list if you want to have one of these?
The price is $7,500 including VAT, and the waiting list is, I think, around 4.5 months.
Well, some voices there from the Cycle Show 2010, ending up with Sean Moulton of the Moulton Bicycle Company. One kind of bike that wasn't on display at the Cycle Show was a penny farthing, probably because those haven't really been in general circulation for more than 100 years. But there are people who enjoy riding penny farthings. And to tell me about a race of penny farthings, I have on the line Matt Sparks. Matt, welcome to the Bike Show.
Hi there. Yeah, in September there was the Knutsford Great Race, which is sort of, it's a penny farthing race. It attracts about 80 riders each year. And the strange thing about it is that it's held once every 10 years, which is that's the first thing that sort of piqued my interest, really. So I had to sort of go along and see what was involved.
Well, let's have a listen to your report on the Knutsford Great Race.
Make ready! Give! Fire!
It's a 3-hour race, so it will finish at 5 o'clock. There is an electronic lap counter, and every machine has a little tag on it, a little blue tag. You can probably see it on the back wheel. And as they go past Brough Corner, they get automatically clocked up.
My name's Fiona, and a year ago I saw a notice on the moor down here in Knutsford sort of saying learn to ride a penny farthing. So I thought, oh, I'll go along and have a look, see what it's all about with my camera. Saw a lot of people falling off, falling on, and it was great fun. So the first race was in 1980 and attracted about 16, 18 riders, something like that. Then 1990, there were a few more. 2000, a few more. And then this year, we've got 86 riders from all over the world.
I'm Gary Sanderson. I come from New Jersey in the United States. If you travel with a penny farthing, which I've done now for over 15 years, there are some special issues. One, every airline says in their regulations that they will take a bicycle. When you arrive at the airport with one of these high-wheel bicycles, or penny farthings as they're called here, they're usually a little shocked, like, are you sure this is a bicycle? And of course it is. It has two wheels. But they will take it. If you usually have to work with them a little bit to convince them and help them with the packing and so on. Okay. Be cooperative.
Without overemphasizing, they are such a thrill to ride. This is the only reason that I do it. I'm not a show person, because when I do ride normally, I go out into the lanes and just enjoy cycling on my own. But I do cycle also with other people. And the great achievement that I did in 1999 was to ride from Land's End to John O'Groats. And that was pretty hard, but I'd forgotten that because I was asked by a good friend of mine, Callie Callaman, did I fancy riding it again this year? And I just said, OK, I'll give it a go. And we completed it on Friday. This is my retirement year, really. I'm 65, and I think 65-year-old pensioners shouldn't really be doing this sort of thing anymore, but there you are. I should do it as long as I can. It's 1888, built in Boston in America, and it's steel, and it's been nickel-plated. I had it re-plated about 20 years ago, and I do a lot of miles on it. Last year, I cycled from Mainz in Germany down to Switzerland with 8 other penny riders. Unfortunately, 2 of them ended up in hospital. And talking amongst the group, I was the only one amongst them that's never ended up in hospital. I've been knocked off, but I've never ended up in hospital yet.
The sensation of being up high, first of all, you see the world differently than you do from down on the ground, so to speak. And the balance is much the same. In fact, it's probably more stable, in fact, than a lower bike, because the big wheel has a lot of gyroscopic stability imparted to the machine. The problem is to get up and down, and you have to learn how to do that. And there's a little hop involved. You put your left foot on the peg and then kick with the right foot, get the thing rolling, and it's the rolling of the front wheel that gives some gyroscopic stability to the machine. Then you have time to hop up and ease yourself in the saddle. Another important difference, though, besides the difficulty of getting up on it and then getting back down again, is that it's a direct drive machine, so the pedals are going all the time. Whenever the wheel is turning, the pedals are going. So you have to learn to cope with that.
There's some solo riders, maybe five of them, who are very serious. And it is quite daunting, actually, because they come at a real pace and they shout, passing on the right, and you just got to stay on the inside. And then they go round you, and I'm just staying out of the way. But the problem is, there's one corner in particular you have to take very wide, and I was past approaching the corner, so I took it too shallow and nearly came off. So that's what I'm worried about, being passed by one of the real fast guys on the corner. But so far, we're just staying out of trouble. We're doing okay.
Well, thanks for that fantastic report, Matt. It sounded like a great day. Did you enjoy yourself?
Oh, it was absolutely fantastic. Such a spectacle to see, really.
Did you get to have a go?
I did, at the very end. I mean, these bikes are worth thousands of pounds, so people are quite protective of them. But one man was kind enough to let me have a go, and I clambered on top of it and had a run, a few hundred yards or so, and they are really hard to ride.
But fun to ride, because there were people kind of waxing lyrical about how exciting it was, how different it was from riding a low-down bike, they might call it.
Yeah, it's completely different. You're so much higher up. I mean, some of the wheels, they go up to about 60 inches at the front, and you're perched right at the very top of that. So you're a lot higher up. It's almost like being in a 4x4 or something like that. But, of course, you're just perched atop this kind of spindly wheel. And when you steer, the front wheel moves just like on a normal bike, but it's so big that it sort of hits you on the thighs, and it's quite a knack to get used to, really.
I mean, I guess it could have been a kind of historical parade or show or rally or something like that, but it did sound like there were some contestants, some competitors who were taking it pretty seriously.
Oh, yeah. It was nothing like a sort of a parade, really. I mean, that's what I was expecting when I went, but people were going really flat out. This was a race, yeah, no mistake. And, I mean, the man who won, he put in over 100 laps, and the course is over a kilometre long. So in 3 hours to do 100 laps is incredible, really, and it's a very, very tight course with very sharp corners, so it's quite dangerous as well.
I mean, because these were the bikes of the first bike boom, weren't they?
Yeah, but, I mean, they were almost made obsolete by the time that they got out there, really. I mean, obviously they were in massively widespread use, and they took off hugely, but then just a few years later the safety bicycle came along, which is kind of more akin to what we ride now, and made it obsolete, because penny farthings are they're very dangerous to ride. If you fall off, it's quite a serious thing. So the safety bicycle came along and made it much safer.
Well, it's good that there's some people keeping going. Well, thank you very much for filing that report, and you're going to be taking a leap forward a few decades to the bikes of the early 20th century with a report from L'Eroica in Italy, and I'm looking forward to featuring that later on in this winter season. So thanks very much, Matt, and it's a happy birthday to you, because it's your birthday today.
That's right. Thank you very much.
Well, that's about it for the show this week. Next week, we'll be talking about great lives in cycling. So until then, stay warm out there. It's bloody freezing.